Hi, and welcome to another episode of Dose of Pharma. I'm Jess.
And I'm Christine. So Jess, what does today's guest and Albert Einstein have in common?
Well, Albert Einstein was a patent examiner, and so are our guests today. Our guests are Joanne Lee and Nicholas Alcaraz, and they both work for IP Australia, where they work to examine patents. So let's get into the episode. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So to start off, maybe you could tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Do you want to go first, Jo?
Yep. Okay, so I'm Joanne. I'm a patent examiner in a team where we deal with polymers and applied chemistry. So I've got my AD, which is kind of say I've completed my training for maybe 1 year now. So I'm quite independent, which is fun. Yep. So cool. I think I started PharmSci 2011, then did honours, did PhD, and then ended up at IP Australia as a patent examiner.
Yep. Great. I also studied at Monash, did the PharmSci degree with the formulation science specialisation. I did honours and my PhD under Ben Boyd. Then I spent a little bit of time postdocing with him, running a research project. And then I sort of jumped out to what's called a clinical research organization. So it's a company that runs clinical trials on behalf of pharmaceutical companies. You're sort of like the middleman. And then I ended up at IP Australia doing the same as Joe. I'm not as far in. I'm only a year in just recently, and so I'm still in training. I don't have that AD qualification yet, and so I'm not as independent. I still have a full-time coach assessing my work and guiding me to improve, which is a really great aspect of the job that I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
I've jumped around a bit. Took me a while to realize what I was interested in.
Yeah, definitely take like a while to realize what you want to do, and I doubt that's something a lot of us realize, that there's a job that you can do doing the pharmaceutical science course. You don't really like going to this course really thinking about the whole patent things at the end and being a patent examiner. Why don't you be able to explain a bit more what a patent examiner does and what a patent is?
Essentially, a patent examiner is someone that works for the government, that reviews and examines patent applications and goes through the process of ensuring that they reach the requirements of the Patents Act, which is the legislation that sort of controls intellectual property to some extent in Australia. And I guess a patent is a document, like a legal document, that outlines a particular invention. And as part of your invention, you get a monopoly for a certain period of time. Most of the time, it's around 20 years. And that allows you to use and control the distribution of that invention based on what's described or defined in that document in Australia. And you'll have to get a patent in every jurisdiction you want to have your monopoly. So, you'd get one for the US, you'd get one for the Europe, you'd get one for China, Japan, and then there's us sort of thing. And that's what we do as examiners. We make sure that it reaches the requirements so that it's a fair trade-off. You know, they're divulging their information to the public so we can utilize it to make further inventions and improve society, but we also give them the legal monopoly over that invention so they can make some profit.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said.
That's so interesting. Like how you said that it has to be like approved for each country. Is that, I guess, because each country has their own like patent guidelines?
Yeah, so we have the Patents Act, I think it's 1990, and that's what we follow. So we have different requirements, say, to the US and the Europeans. So we have to examine the patent based on what is the legislation. So that's why there's no like universal patent. You can get supply one, get it all for the whole world.
Yeah.
It would be great, but it doesn't really work like that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does get quite complex. Every country has its own little thing based on how their laws are and how they want to determine what an invention is and how someone can control their monopoly. It looks like there is an attempt to try and start standardizing it, but I think that's going to be a long way away, right? All this stuff takes time, and the countries always have to find the middle ground that they're happy to reach. But, you know, we have some similarities with both Europe and the US. And so for people that are applying in multiple jurisdictions, some things carry over pretty well. So it's not like you have to redo everything for every country. Yeah.
Yeah, like international relations is always difficult, but it's good that there's like some similarities.
Yeah. There's a lot of money involved as well. So you can imagine there's a lot of different people with different interests in that space.
So what kind of skills do you need to be a patent examiner? Like, especially in comparison to like, Nicholas, you worked in clinical trials, like what, how do they differ doing this job you do now?
Sort of a lot of the soft skills still carry over. So you need to have good time management, good communication, because you're writing reports, you're dealing with attorneys, so external stakeholders. A lot of those core soft skills that you'll need in most jobs carry over quite well. In my particular job, based on my PhD, a lot of my technical expertise helps as well. I did a PhD in sort of pharmaceutical formulations, and that's the team that I'm in at IP Australia, where we mainly look at patents for formulations and pharmaceutical compounds. So a lot of that chemistry and stuff helps a lot. I wouldn't say a PhD is essential. I think it helps for sure, but I think even if you've had a little bit of experience in a lab or perhaps doing a short research project, that would go a long way as well. For sure.
Yeah. I think with me, like, because my area is in polymer and applied chemistry. The applied chemistry is really broad. Like, I do food, I do pesticides, I do detergents, hairsprays, and a whole bunch of different things. So, my technical background, I guess, what I did in like honors and PhD wasn't helpful, I guess. It was more like knowing the basic chemistry, like the organic chemistry, phys chem, and then using that basic knowledge to kind of be able to read what I'm reading at work and to comprehend it and pick up things really quickly, which I think I did learn during honours. Like, you read stuff, you pick it up, try to comprehend. And so it was like more soft skills, like, yeah, that kind of stuff that really does help, I guess, in patent examination.
Yeah, just to add to that, I would totally agree that the research component of my experience, and even the clinical trial one where you'd have to read these really long protocols that you'd be following the rules of, being able to read and digest information quickly and finding the relevant parts is really important to this job in particular, because there's quite a lot of reading involved.
Yeah, it's pretty much all desk work, which I know some people don't like, but I'm pretty okay with it.
Yeah, do you end up like learning a lot having to read so broadly, especially being focused in such like a broad area?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like you would more than me, because your group is much broader in technology.
Yeah, because we have like the chemistry side of things, and then I guess Nick's in the pharmaceuticals, there's like the chemical compounds and then biotherapeutics, and everything that doesn't fit in those kind of end up in my team. So we're kind of like, okay, so no one really knows what this is, but you're the only one that can do it at this time. Do you want to do it? And you're like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. You go on Google, read up on it, become an expert, and you go from there.
I was just going to ask, I guess, like, how did you find out about this whole industry? Like, I guess in undergrad, I remember hearing like patent, I guess that term being thrown around. But for you guys to then go into honours, PhD, and then go, I guess, into the patent world. How did you find out about it?
Yeah, I think during undergrad, they did kind of bring up like intellectual property and patents, but they don't really go too much detail into it. And I think I remember seeing, I think, some patent attorneys at Career Fairs, but I didn't hear about patent examination until my second year of PhD, where one of my PhD co-supervisors, he was giving a talk about intellectual property because he was a trainee patent attorney for a while. And then I think it was just like one of his last slides, just kind of, oh, there's also like, you know, this attorney, but on the other side, there's a patent examiner. And I was like, that sounds a lot less stressful than an attorney's job. So I kind of started looking and digging into that and seeing what it was. And I was like, it sounded actually quite what I wanted to do. So that was it for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar. So in first year, I remember a subject run by a guy called Dr. David Morden. I'm not sure if he's still around at Monash anymore, but he dedicated a whole month's worth of lectures to intellectual property. And I actually really liked it. Yeah, I really liked it. And I thought it was really interesting. And ever since then, there's sort of been like a little seed in me, like, oh, I wouldn't mind doing that. And similar to Joanne, I looked into the patent attorney route. Throughout your PhD, a lot of these conferences and fairs are sponsored by different patent firms and stuff, and they always have a speaker there. And then I found out about IP Australia through Joanne getting a job there, pretty much, because we were doing our PhDs at the same time, or we were both at Monash at the same time. And then I also found out that someone else from my research group's wife worked at IP Australia as a patent examiner. And so I kept on getting more and more information about it. But at the same time, I had a few friends that were patent attorneys and I spoke to them. And as much as the intellectual property side of things sounded interesting, I don't think I liked the patent attorney side of things. And so I felt like this was an obvious experience to try out. And so I applied for the job when the round came up, and I was fortunate to get all the way through. And, you know, it's been a year and I'm pretty happy that I made the change. I think it suits me more than my last job. I just wasn't a fit for clinical trials.
It shows how useful it is knowing people and talking to people and doing that networking.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, that's interesting as well, because I guess honours and PhD was quite like research based and also like lab work based. And then you go into, I guess, an industry that's more, I guess, as you mentioned, like office based. So I guess how was the transition from being in the lab a lot of the time to not at all?
I can go first for that one. Yeah. I did enjoy the lab. I did enjoy doing experiments. I did, you know, testing my hypotheses and stuff. I did get a bit tired of it over time. And the other reality is academia can be quite exhausting. I think if you have a strong passion and it's a big part of your identity, you can overcome some of those hurdles. But for me, that wasn't there enough. And I found those really long hours, like there were periods I was doing, you know, 10 plus hour days, 5 to 6 times a week, every week, just nonstop for months at a time. And then when I started postdocing after PhD, there was, you know, the whole grant cycle and this real pressure to publish decent papers to increase your chances of getting a grant to continue your research. And you're then on this, you know, 9-month cycle of constant high stress environment. And so that just wasn't for me. I didn't have that internal drive or motivation to put up with that some other people do. And so by the end, I was pretty ready to leave the lab and try something else. And that's why I went to clinical trials. And that sort of gave me an idea of what a desk job was like. The benefit of that was that sometimes you'd be able to go out to the sites where the clinical trials were being run. So that's a nice way to mix up being at the desk. But now that I'm here full time at the desk, I kind of like it as well. The other benefit that I'll just touch on quickly is that the work is quite independent. And what I really disliked about my old job was you would work in really big global teams. And so people weren't available at certain times because of time zone differences. And a lot of times work got held up because you were just waiting on a particular document or an email. And, you know, it's a really big moving part company. And so here it's sort of like you take your work, you work on your work, you send out your work, you don't really take your work home too much. you still speak with your co-workers about your cases and you discuss things, but it's not to the same extent where like you're wholly dependent on other people. And I really like that, you know, just zoning in, doing my job and, you know, being responsible for myself.
Yeah, I guess with that as well, that's kind of during like honours and PhD, like you're able to be independent. So then
totally
that kind of goes into what you're doing now.
I think with honours and PhD though, sometimes when it's a bit too independent and sometimes because you're the one that's, you know, spearheading this project, so you know best or whatever. So sometimes it was a bit difficult to ask for help because other people wouldn't know, or it was just sometimes just difficult to kind of move forward. But with in IP Australia, like I could just have a chat with like someone else on my team. We can discuss it. And then that is actually quite nice, I think, because you'd be doing your work, you're quite independent, and then you'd be like, I'm not too sure about this. And you can just grab someone and talk to them, which is quite nice.
Yes, it's got that really good balance between like working independently, but also having that teamwork aspect.
And as a trainee, obviously you have more questions, and I found that people are very keen to get involved. I think a lot of people enjoy what they do at IP Australia, and so they're keen to hear about other people's sort of issues or roadblocks and try and like overcome them together, which is really nice.
Well, that's great, especially that people enjoy what they do there. That definitely makes it like a much better working environment.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Good vibes. Yeah.
What was the training process like? You just briefly mentioned it then. Like for both of you, I know Nicholas, you're currently in training, but like what is the process like to become a pattern examiner?
You can go first because I think my training process was a bit different from yours.
Okay. I have heard that it changes pretty regularly. So like every intake, they tweak it to make it better. They cut out the stuff people didn't like and they add in things that people liked and they make it more like job applicable, which is great. The general structure is you're in training for around 2 years. You can be a bit quicker, but you know, that's the maximum time you have. And there's three main stages. The first one is kind of like university and you have set classes and you have mini assignments and you have a one-on-one mentor sort of thing. And you have a smaller group that's maybe three or four people that you're working with closer from that intake. And it's all the basics. You learn all the basics, all the legal side of things that you wouldn't know coming from like a technical role, which most people do. And then stage two is you're a bit more independent. You have one-on-one training and you're no longer in that little group. You have less classes and it's more just working on live cases, so real patents, but everything gets quality controlled through your coach. And stage three is the same, but you're expected to do more work at a higher quality. And once you, you know, reach a particular level, you get given what Joanne has, which is that AD, which is sort of like a qualification that allows you to work totally independently. You can accept patents on your own. You no longer need to have someone checking all your work. And it's really robust, and the people that are doing the training are really good at their job. They're all really experienced examiners that enjoy coaching staff and making, you know, getting the new generation going, or at least that's been my experience with the three different coaches I've had. And it's very much a mentality of there's no wrong answers and there's no dumb questions. Make as many mistakes as you can now so that when you actually become an AD, you don't make mistakes because you've learned from every possible mistake ever, which is a really nice mentality. Like they definitely make sure that you're not underprepared when you hit the sort of shelves.
That's great. It sounds like they really care about the job.
Yeah. I think it was good on how there was no expectation of us to have any legal background. Like I had knew nothing about law really before I came in. But I think they took the time to kind of really teach us all on how to apply the legal, I guess, mind to what we're doing. So yeah, I don't know if that scares some people off, like, oh, I don't know anything about law, so I don't want to really get into like examination or attorney, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that'd be good for like people doing like our pharmaceutical science course to hear, to know that it is an option and they don't need to know all this law stuff that we don't cover.
Yeah, totally. We had a lot of people in the last intake that were undergraduates that just came out of like biomedical degrees and science, more general science degrees, or people that had honours in biology, stuff like that. And yeah, they all get caught up to speed real quick on the legal side in the first maybe 2 months. And then you just keep building on it over and over and over, sort of thing.
Even when you get your AD, like you're still building up on that kind of knowledge and like situations, like every case is different. Like it's not, you always have to think kind of, oh, this is a new situation, what do I do, kind of thing. So it's kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the perks of the job. Like every case is truly different. And you're always learning new technical backgrounds, kind of like what you said, you know, you're piecing together, oh, today I'm learning about this type of cancer. Today I'm learning about this type of compound that does this and this new combination and stuff like that. And it's all really interesting, if that's what you like, sort of thing. And then on top of that, it's very thought-provoking. You have to constantly be asking yourself questions. Oh, you know, do I object to this problem or not? How grave of it is an issue? Am I understanding the law correctly? Stuff like that. So yeah, it's really good. You still get home tired because you're thinking all day, even though you're sitting at your desk doing nothing essentially. Yeah. You still come home a bit tired because you've had a workout, you know, a mental workout.
But good. At least you have the time to relax at home rather than continue where
that's true.
There wasn't as much free time.
Yeah, yeah. Once you clock off here, you truly clock off, at least at the level we're at, I think, just as patent examiners, without any management requirements.
Yeah, it sounds like it needs a lot of adaptability, but it's very fulfilling.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree.
Once you accept a very, like, you've worked through, I don't know, a few reports, and then you look at the patents when it was first filed to when it was accepted, sometimes it's very satisfying on the outcome.
Totally.
Will you tend to like work on a report for a while? Like how long will you tend to like work on the one thing?
It depends on what type of work you're doing. We have kind of two main works. We have national cases and international cases. So with national cases, sometimes like the overseas jurisdictions might have examined it already, and so they have they've looked at the prior art, so they've kind of looked what's out there and decided whether that's the law or not, and we can use their results and do our reports based on that. So that might take like a day or two, but with international work, that's starting from scratch. So that's when you go on databases and you have to find out whether this is novel or not, and that could take up to a week or a bit more. So yeah, but that's really fun, the international work, when you get to find, like, you start from scratch, you're like, okay, what is this, what's out there, can it be this, can it be that? It's quite fun.
Yeah, I agree. Some people really like that element of the job. So that would be the closest thing I can think of is like doing a literature review in science, where you're essentially, okay, like this is my problem and I want to find the solution. And you do a really broad search. What's out there in the world? Who has attempted this problem? How close have they gotten to fixing it? What's reasonable? And then you can actually write your report based on your findings, kind of thing. And that is quite fun. The other thing that I'll add to that is, you're expected to finish your report in a day or two, or these international sort of searches and reports in around a week. But that doesn't mean that you can't start something, spend half a day on it, and then park it and do something else. It's not like once you take it to start working on it, you have to finish it within 2 days, which is also quite nice, because sometimes if you get a bit bored or you run into like a roadblock, it's sometimes good to be able to pick a different case and freshen your mind before coming back to it. I do that quite a lot because I like working on two or three things at once. But I know other people that are the total opposite of me, that is like, you know, I'm going to do only one thing, finish it, move on. So it's kind of good that different personalities can still work as they prefer.
I guess even now, like I'm going through honours and gaining experience and doing a literature review, is there any cases, I guess, where you see what's out there and let's say someone misses something that is currently out there, because I guess that's kind of, in a way, the whole point of a patent. You should be like the only one. I guess, have you experienced anything like that, or know of that in the industry, or is it, I guess, very rare because it's so thorough?
It does happen. Sometimes things are missed. Sometimes I might look at something and like the US might have been like, oh, it's not been inventive, it's all good. And then I'll look at it and I'll be like, getting this gut feeling, I'm like, this isn't quite right. I'm sure there's something out there. So you can make the decision to kind of do like a quick Google search or something, just read up about it. And then we can decide to do a whole thorough search. So look again, like from top to bottom. And so you could, that can happen, or sometimes it does happen where things do get through, but there are kind of avenues where things might be re-examined, and then chances for the applicant, the inventor, to kind of fix it, kind of thing. So yeah, so it does, it might happen, and then sometimes it ends up in court when it gets quite, if it's a bit more complex. So we hopefully it doesn't end up in court.
Yeah, there's a whole system of checks and balances like all throughout the process, and because these things are worth, you know, a lot of money sometimes, the process is long on purpose, and so there's a lot of time throughout the whole process, and even after it's been fully granted and published, like Joanne was saying, that you still have ways to rectify issues. Obviously, as patent examiners, we don't want to be the cause of that issue. You'd never want to be the reason why something got incorrectly granted or incorrectly denied. But that's also part of the job, right? Like, and with more experience, that's less and less likely to happen. Yeah. Fortunately, I haven't had any cases where it was like a glaring mistake, but you know, I'm sure over 30 years it's bound to happen. Like if you work your whole life at IP Australia, you're going to have a few blunders.
Yeah.
It's natural. Yeah, yeah, it's natural.
Yeah, if something like that would happen, it's definitely something that would like stick in your memory. Is there any like project you've worked on that you really remember, but not necessarily just for like bad reasons? Have you had like really good ones, or just like a project you've done that's really stuck in your mind?
I think my first case I ever got, I still remember to the day, because my coach was like, oh, I picked you this case. It's about alcoholic ice cream. It should be really fun. Like, this is going to be good. And then we picked it up. And then I think during trading, we were going through like each step of the law. So every time we did that, I would go back to my case and we'd talk about how it applied to my case. And then for some reason, I had all the issues you could possibly have in this case. My coach was like, oh, I'm so sorry, I thought this would be fun, it's just had so many issues. I'm like, that's okay. And that was kind of the norm for me first, and then when I started doing other cases, I was like, yeah, that was a really bad case. Yeah. So yeah, it's one I won't forget.
Of course, it's your first case, it ends up being a really difficult one.
Yeah.
That's how they get you. The fun cases are always the worst. The ones that look fun on the surface are always the worst cases. I haven't had anything super notable yet. I've obviously done probably a lot less than Joanne. But one case that was kind of funny or report that I did was I was as much of the expert as you could ever be. So it was literally what I did my PhD on. And so they tried to pull a few sneakies, right? As they always do, it's the right thing to do in their situation. They're getting as much as they can for their patent, and that's our job to make sure it's what's fair. And so obviously, I really knew all the ins and outs, and I also knew that the search wasn't sufficient. And so my coach let me do another top-up search, as they call it, to find the leftover stuff. And that was really fun because that was kind of like revisiting my PhD, and it was interesting to see how much stuff had changed in the 3 years since I'd finished my PhD. So that was kind of fun. And I think you come across a lot of little situations like that all the time just because you do so many cases. Otherwise, in training, you don't have too many other opportunities to pursue other things. But I think once you finish, there's a lot of secondments that become available and extra training that you can do. So you can spend 6 months in policy or 6 months with finance even. You could even dabble with trademarks as opposed to patents, which is another form of intellectual property. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity, but as a trainee, those first 2 years, you really they really just invest a lot in you to get you to become a proper examiner as opposed to a trainee.
So with working at IP, that's in Canberra, right?
So I'm in Canberra.
Yeah,
I'm in Melbourne.
Melbourne. Yeah.
So you've had to relocate to a different state, have you, Joanne?
Yeah, that's right.
What was that like?
It was interesting. So it was actually the first time I moved out of home. So I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. But yeah, Canberra is interesting. I think the first few months I did come in here, I was still writing up my PhD thesis. So it was pretty good actually, because I had a lot of downtime. And so I got that done. And then we had bushfires in Canberra. I don't know if you remember, there was the end of 2019, there was like fires like everywhere in Australia. So that wasn't fun. And then COVID hit after that. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. This is no, it's been good. Made a few friends, some of them at work, some of them from like, I don't know, other social activities.
That definitely sounds very eventful.
Yeah. I know some people probably try to not move from where they are for a job. It's a big step, I think. I think I was luckily enough in a position where I could do that. And I think it was a good thing for me to kind of get out there, be independent on my own, as well as like, it was the first kind of real job I had. So that was good too. So I think if people are a bit wary about it, I think they should try and just do it, I think.
Yeah.
It's such a giant step to move out of home, interstate, real job.
Yeah.
I'm glad it all went really well.
Yeah. It's like you do miss your friends and your family. Try, you know, any opportunity to go back to Melbourne. But, yeah, I guess for now I'll be in Canberra.
I actually got, I don't want to say lucky, but because that's definitely not the right word. I got told I had to move for at least the training period, and I mentally prepared myself for that. I live with my partner here, and so we were going to try long distance and all that. And so, but we were happy to give it a go. And I agree with Joanne that if you can make it work, it's probably a good opportunity. If it's within your capability, and we figured it was. And so we were really keen to try that out. And I wanted the job, so I was willing to take that on. But obviously COVID hit and we were in lockdown as I started. And IP Australia was actually incredible in their really fast transition to send us everything we needed, set us up remotely, and then they allowed us to do training from remotely, and the whole training academy that you're part of in that first stage fully adapted to going online and sort of, you know, doing video courses and stuff. And it worked really well. And they were really perceptive of the challenges that maybe the Melbourne folk were having in lockdown. And they would call us, you know, someone from HR that's sort of like the counselor and whatnot would call us and check up on us regularly, which was really impressive. And this is the luckily part. At the end of it, by the time we were finally allowed to move to Canberra, we actually do have a Melbourne office. It's a small satellite office, and they were okay for some of us to either go fully outposted or to Melbourne, because we had proven that we could work independently from home and whatnot, and we'd finish the early stages of training. And so I obviously took the Melbourne option because, you know, it's a bit more convenient, but I do have someone from my cohort that still ended up going to Canberra, and he's loving it up there, and he's loving starting his new life. And he says Canberra is a great city. And it's got all the, like, you know, he's really into rock climbing, so it's got stuff for his hobbies and whatnot. And so, I wouldn't let it stop you from giving that a go if it's not that big of a commitment for you. I'm not sure what the future will hold though in regards to the Melbourne office or starting as a trainee fully remote. I think there is still an expectation to do the bulk of your training in Canberra at least.
I think it's good. I think after training, there's options. I think if people want to go outposted, so we have a few people on my team like working in Brisbane and some in Sydney, some in Adelaide. The option is there to talk to your manager about if you want to do that. So I think, yeah, I think it's nice kind of having these options. It's like, well, if I like, or if some people are like, well, my partner's moving to another city for a job, you could still keep your job and just and go take the job with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. There seems to be a lot of flexibility at IP Australia with that sort of stuff and working conditions and your general hours that you work. You know, some people are early starters and so they just finish early, as long as you're sort of there between at least 10 to 2, which are like, you know, the main business hours, whether you start early and leave early or vice versa, or, you know, if you've got to go pick up your kids, work seems to be really accommodating depending on your circumstances, which is something to consider with a job for sure. Yeah. As you get older and older, maybe when you're like fresh out of uni, 22, 23, it's not really a concern. Yeah. When you start hitting my age, 30, 30 plus, it's definitely stuff you consider.
Yeah. When I first started this job, it was surprising the working conditions, like how many hours, the flexible hours. There's a very high super as well in our government jobs.
Yeah, it's a government position.
Yeah, and as well as like allowances and all that kind of stuff, like health and wellbeing allowance. It's an actually pretty good working conditions.
Highly recommend. At least if you're interested at all in IP, I would highly recommend looking into it. Yeah. Work didn't tell me to say that. That's my personal opinion. Yeah.
Sounds like a pretty great job.
I'm pretty happy. Yeah.
Yeah. Really happy too.
Yeah. No complaints.
It all sounds, I guess, really accommodating, which, as you said, is really important as you grow older and to know as well that they care so much about you. I guess as well, jumping back to the whole relocating aspect that we were just talking about, I think like that's interesting because obviously like, I'm graduating at the end of this year, so I'm going to be looking for jobs, and like that's an idea that's been, I guess, in my head. As you said, it's a big jump and not knowing, I guess, what it's going to be like up there. But I guess for you guys, was it more so you pick the job because of the job of being a patent examiner rather than the location? And the location, I guess, is just an aspect of it that you're willing to adapt to.
Yeah, for me, it was definitely I picked it because I like the job and the sound of the job rather than the actual location. I think the first time I went to Canberra was probably 2 months before I started the job. I was like, oh, let's check out what Canberra is. I've never been there. So it wasn't the location. I guess, yeah, it was just for me, the job. And I was like, if I'm happy with the job, like I can, other things in my life, I can work a bit around it. As well as like, there's nothing, I guess at that point, there was nothing really much stopping me from traveling. Now it's a bit more difficult. So that's also something now to consider is travel restrictions and how it's not as easy to, you know, visit someone. So, yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a big leap, I think, especially now.
Yeah, things are a bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's especially scary to go into a place you don't know, or you don't know that I knew two people here. And yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to do that thing that scares you to get that self-growth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like to get what you want in life.
Yeah. And then I think once I came here, it's like, oh, you learn to do things and you learn, like you meet people, you kind of help all each other out, especially in Canberra. There's very transient city. Like a lot of graduates move to Canberra for a job. So like people are quite friendly and all that. So that did help out.
To wrap things up, what advice would you give to current students or your undergraduate self if you could go back and talk to yourself?
I can go first. That's actually a really great question. I think the main thing I would tell undergraduate Nick is really explore your options. So I think even by the end of my undergrad degree, I wasn't too sure what sort of job I would like. You know, I had this identity of that I was a scientist and that I like chemistry and I'm a bit nerdy and whatever. But I didn't actually think about like, how, what does that translate to in the real world? And what would I like doing? And what are my goals? Right. So as soon as you can outline those, you can make a much more informed decision for that first step into the professional world and start on the right foot in your career. So I don't have regrets per se, and I definitely don't regret doing a PhD. I wouldn't recommend it to most people, but I don't regret it myself. But it took me a while to figure out what I found important and where I could find that. So, you know, I obviously tried clinical trials for a while, and that was a fun little experiment, but it helped me more to realize that I don't want to work in that sort of corporate environment and that I'm not interested in that sort of work. And so it served its purpose, but if I was able to do that investigating before finishing, you know, I would have saved myself maybe four or five years, which, you know, life's not a race and you shouldn't compare with other people, but, you know, it would have been nice to know earlier, I think. So yeah, speak to a lot of people, really figure out what you want to do. Don't be shy to ask questions. People generally want to help you. That's what I've realized.
Yeah. I think mine's kind of really similar. Like, just go out and talk to people, see what's out there. Cause I think I was very naive on what we could do after our studies. It was like, you know, finish farm sci, get a job in like industry, that's it, done. But there's like so much more out there. Like, you don't really realize that, like, even outside of science, like, we've learned so much transferable skills, I think, in farm sci. We can apply it to like so many other different industries. So I think for me, it was like, yeah, just go out, talk, see what you could have done. It would have been great. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, definitely important to self-reflect and realize what you want and make goals. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So
you want money, go do finance and banking.
Yeah, 100%.
You want to follow your passion, stay in academia.
Yeah.
You're happy to just do a 9-to-5, maybe go, you know, be a quality control chemist or something. Just figure out what you want, because every option is viable. There's like, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't think it's, you know, success. It's what you want out of life. So figure out what that is.
Yeah, I think we all determine our success very differently. So whether, exactly, you know, you want that money or that, you know, the fame or whatever, like, you do you. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so thank you for joining us today and talking to us and answering all our questions. Definitely learnt a lot. Didn't know too much about what a pattern examiner was before talking to you guys. It's definitely like an interesting career pathway to consider.
Kind of sad that it wasn't really, no one never mentioned it entering undergrad. It was always like this pattern attorney instead of a pattern examiner, which I don't know. I'm probably biased, but I do enjoy pattern exam.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, thanks for having us and letting us sort of speak our piece and share the gospel of IP Australia.
Yeah.
And being a pattern examiner.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
To conclude the episode, we wish to acknowledge the people of the Kulin Nations on whose land we are gathered today. We pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging. For those listening who may be based elsewhere, we pay our respects to the traditional owners of the land from wherever you may be listening from. We especially welcome any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people listening in today.